Hey everyone, ready for another deep dive? Today, things might get a little hot.
Oh yeah, we're going right into the fire with this one.
We're tackling the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and that whole fiery furnace situation, you know, from Daniel chapter 3.
One of the most famous stories from the Bible.
Definitely. And to help us unpack it all, we've got some great insights from a lecture by Dr. Wendy Witter. She always brings a fresh perspective to these ancient texts.
She does. She really digs into the historical and theological background, which is so helpful.
Okay, so to set the scene, we're picking up after Daniel interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2, right? That whole thing with the giant statue.
Exactly. And it's interesting, the text doesn't give us a specific date for this next event.
Just says Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, but it comes right after the dream interpretation, so you can't help but wonder.
Right, like is he trying to outdo the statue from his dream, build something even grander and more impressive?
Maybe. And this new statue is huge, though the exact size is debated. Some scholars think it was literally 90 feet tall.
Wow, that's massive. Others think it might have been smaller, but placed on a giant platform.
Yeah, either way, it was meant to be a symbol of Nebuchadnezzar's power. A very in-your-face kind of symbol.
Oh, absolutely. And you see that in how he orchestrates the dedication ceremony. He summons all these important officials, satraps, administrators, governors, everyone.
Everyone who's anyone had to be there.
Yeah, and the text really emphasizes that. It lists them all out, which creates this sense of grandeur, but also maybe a bit of mockery, like it's highlighting Nebuchadnezzar's obsession with his image.
It does make you wonder what those officials were really thinking. Were they genuinely impressed or just terrified of disobeying?
It's hard to know for sure, isn't it? But it definitely highlights the tension that existed between outward displays of loyalty and genuine belief.
And that tension is at the heart of what happens next, because everyone bows down to the statue except for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Talk about a gutsy move. To stand firm while everyone else is prostrating themselves before this giant golden statue.
I mean, they knew the consequences wouldn't be pretty.
And of course, their defiance doesn't go unnoticed. These Chaldeans, probably rivals or those jealous of their positions, they seize the opportunity to accuse them.
Classic. Your Majesty, those three Jewish guys, yeah, they're totally not bowing down.
And what's interesting is that their accusation is technically true. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did disobey the king's direct order.
Which raises a really interesting question. Is it always right to obey authority, even if it conflicts with your deepest beliefs? What happens when human laws clash with what you believe is divine law?
That's a question that people have been grappling with for centuries, and it's just as relevant today. I mean, think about it. What do you do when you're told to do something that goes against your conscience, your faith?
No easy answers there. So Nebuchadnezzar, hearing this accusation, he's obviously furious. He confronts them directly.
And what's really interesting is that he gives them a second chance.
Right. Like, you'd think he'd just throw them in the furnace right away. But no, he asks them, "Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" It's almost like a challenge, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely. He's pitting his human power against their faith in divine power. It reminds me of that story with the Assyrian king Sennacherib. Remember, he boasted that no god could ever defeat him.
Oh, yeah. There's this recurring theme of rulers seeing themselves as equals or even superiors to any deity. It's fascinating.
Definitely. And you wonder, why give them a second chance at all? Dr. Witter suggests maybe Nebuchadnezzar recognized their value, even respected them on some level. Or maybe he didn't want to make them martyrs. Who knows?
It makes you think about the complexities of power and the motivations behind even the most seemingly straightforward actions.
For sure. So how do Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego respond to this challenge? Do they back down? Do they try to reason with Nebuchadnezzar?
Nope, not at all. They give one of the most powerful and concise responses in the entire Bible. They don't mince words.
They really don't. It's amazing, their response. They basically say, "Oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't even need to answer you about this."
Wow. What a statement, right? They are facing a fiery death, but they don't even dignify his question with a real answer.
Exactly. And Dr. Witter makes an interesting point about how they address Nebuchadnezzar. In some translations, they don't even use his royal title. Like, they're saying, "We aren't even going to acknowledge you as king."
That's a really good point. They are so focused on God that all earthly power and authority mean nothing to them.
Right. And then comes their famous statement of faith, "Our God can deliver us, but even if he doesn't, we will not bow."
That's the line everyone remembers, right? It's so powerful. Such a strong declaration of faith. But it's interesting because it isn't actually about knowing they'll be saved.
You're right. It's about unwavering commitment to God, no matter what happens. It's not about avoiding the fire.
Yeah, it's a deeper principle. Like, our faith isn't about getting favors or avoiding pain. It's about who we are, even when things get tough.
Exactly. It really challenges us to think about our own values and what we're truly committed to. I mean, what are those things in your life that you wouldn't compromise on? even in the face of real danger or pressure.
Yeah, no kidding. It's easy to read this story and think, well, of course they were so confident. They knew God would save them, but they didn't know that.
That's true. They had no guarantee. It was a leap of faith, not a guarantee of safety.
And Dr. Ritter really cautions against reading this as a promise that faith always equals a happy ending. Because later in Daniel, we see God's people suffering terribly.
That's right. It's a reminder that sometimes even the faithful experience hardship and pain. Sometimes really awful things happen, even to people who love God.
It makes you think their faith wasn't a shield from the realities of life. It was more like the strength to get through them. And okay, so back to the story. Nebuchadnezzar obviously does not take this defiance well at all.
No, not at all. He flies into a rage, a total rage monster, and he orders the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual.
7 times hotter. Can you imagine? That seems a little excessive, right?
Well, the number 7 in the Bible often symbolizes completeness or perfection.
Oh, okay, I see.
So it's like he's saying, I'm going to unleash the full extent of my power on these rebels. But it's also ironic, in a way.
How so?
Well, because he's trying so hard to assert control. But the story just ends up highlighting how little control he actually has.
Right. And of course, his plan backfires spectacularly.
It really does.
Because his soldiers, the ones who actually throw the men into the furnace, they're the ones consumed by the flames.
Oh, yeah. They die instantly.
But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they emerge completely unharmed, not even a singed hair on their heads.
It's pretty incredible. Not even smelling of smoke.
Like the fire couldn't even touch them.
It's this powerful image of God's protection. Their faith is totally vindicated.
Definitely. And then we have that mysterious detail, the appearance of a fourth figure in the flames. And this is key. Only Nebuchadnezzar sees him.
Right. That's the part that always stuck with me. Like, who was that fourth figure? An angel? Some kind of vision?
Why only show himself to Nebuchadnezzar? It's like a, I don't know, a divine mic drop or something.
Exactly. And it really suggests that this fourth figure wasn't there for the men's benefit at all. They were already protected by God's power. It was a revelation specifically for Nebuchadnezzar.
Oh, I get it. Because he was the one who directly challenged God. So God responded in a way that he would understand, a visible display of power beyond any human explanation.
Exactly. It was like God was speaking his language, meeting him where he was at. Instead of a whisper, it was a shout. He couldn't ignore it.
Wow, I never thought of it that way before. So it wasn't about rescuing the men. It was about showing Nebuchadnezzar just how real and powerful their God actually was.
That's one way to look at it, yeah. It's a reminder that God can work in ways we don't expect. And sometimes those interventions are less about changing our circumstances and more about changing hearts and minds.
So Nebuchadnezzar, seeing all this, he praises the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? And he even issues a decree protecting their dog and threatening anyone who speaks against him.
Yeah, he does. It's a pretty dramatic turnaround, right?
Definitely. But Dr. Witter points out that while it's a big moment for Nebuchadnezzar, his conversion seems incomplete somehow. Like, he acknowledges God's power, but he's still trying to control it with threats and decrees and all that.
It's true.
He doesn't really get the idea of surrender and humility that are kind of centrals to real faith, right?
It's a good point. It's like he's saying, okay, fine, you're powerful, but I'm still the king here.
He hasn't fully grasped what he's witnessed?
Not really, no. And, you know, this brings us to another key theme in the story, idolatry.
Oh, yeah, right. That golden statue. It wasn't just a random art project, was it?
No, definitely not. It represented something much deeper, that human tendency to create idols. Things we place above God in our lives.
And those idols don't have to be statues or physical objects, right?
Right. They could be anything, really. Power, wealth, success, even our own egos. Anything we prioritize over our relationship with God can become an idol.
So when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow, they weren't just defying a king, they were refusing to worship a false idol. They recognized that danger.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's a challenge for all of us today, too. What are the things we might be tempted to bow down to in our own lives?
Good question.
Are we so focused on achieving certain goals or gaining approval, maybe accumulating possessions, that we lose sight of what truly matters?
It's something to think about for sure. You know, this story really reminds us that true faith is about more than just believing. It's about aligning our actions with our beliefs, even when it's really hard.
Yes.
It's about recognizing those idols in our own lives and choosing to prioritize our relationship with God above all else. It's wild, right? I mean, even after this whole incredible display of divine power, Nebuchadnezzar, he still doesn't quite get it.
It really does show the difference between acknowledging power and actually understanding faith.
Yeah.
He's starting to see that there's something bigger than himself out there, but he's still trying to fit it all into his existing worldview.
like trying to force this new understanding into his old ideas about control and authority.
Exactly. Like someone seeing a UFO and then immediately calling the military to capture it.
Ha, that's a perfect analogy. So you recognize that something amazing is happening, but you still want to dominate it.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, what would true transformation have looked like for Nebuchadnezzar? How could he have moved beyond simply acknowledging God's power, you know, and really embraced a deeper understanding of faith?
It's a great question, and it's kind of connected to that fourth figure in the flames. The fact that only Nebuchadnezzar saw him, that's significant, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. It's one of the most fascinating parts of the story. Dr. Witter suggests it was intentional. Like, God wanted to give Nebuchadnezzar a very specific message.
A message that only he could understand, right? Because he was the one who directly challenged God.
Exactly. So God responded in a way that made sense to him. A visible, undeniable manifestation of divine power.
Instead of a whisper, it was a shout. A shout he couldn't ignore.
Exactly. And it makes you think, what are the different ways God might be revealing himself to us? What are the fourth figures in our own lives?
What a great way to put it. The experiences, the encounters that really shake us up and make us realize there's something greater out there.
Yes. Things that challenge our assumptions and point us toward a deeper reality.
It makes you wonder, are we sometimes so busy, you know, with our own plans and expectations that we miss those subtle signs, the moments of grace right in front of us?
It's a good point. We might be missing something really important. It's a good reminder to pay attention, to be open to the unexpected.
Maybe it's a stunning sunset or a chance encounter with a stranger.
Or an unexpected act of kindness.
Right. Those could be our fourth figures, little whispers of God's presence and love.
Exactly. But if we're not paying attention, we might miss them.
So how do we do that? How do we cultivate that awareness, that openness to the divine?
Well, I think it starts with quieting the noise in our lives, creating space for stillness and reflection.
That makes sense. Tuning out the distractions and tuning into what's really important.
Yes. It could be through prayer, maybe meditation, spending time in nature, or just trying to be more present in each moment.
Yeah. Instead of rushing through the day, we actually stop and pay attention.
And it's about trusting that God is always trying to communicate with us, even if we don't always recognize it at first.
Sometimes it's a grand gesture, like that fourth figure, and sometimes it's a quiet nudge in our hearts, just a gentle reassurance that we're not alone.
Beautifully said. This whole conversation has really given me a new appreciation for this story. I mean, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
It's not just a Sunday school story about three brave guys, right?
It's so much more than that. It's a story about the nature of true faith, the challenge of idolatry, and all the different ways that God reveals himself to us.
And it reminds us that faith isn't about avoiding challenges or demanding miracles. It's about trusting God even when things are really, really hard.
Yes, it's about aligning our lives with his will, even when it's difficult or inconvenient.
And it's about looking for those fourth figures in our own lives, those moments that wake us up and remind us of God's incredible power and love.
Beautifully said. That's a great way to wrap things up.
Well, that's it for our deep dive into the fiery furnace. Thanks for joining us.
And to everyone listening, keep the conversation going. Share your thoughts and reflections. What resonated with you? What are your fourth figures? Let's keep exploring these ideas together.
Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep the conversation going.